This is the Starting Five, and today on the Starting Five, back from his playoff voyage with TNT, he is your Raptor broadcaster as well. He is Matt Devlin. It is a pleasure to have you aboard and talk some playoffs and Raptors, sir.
Always fun, James. Always fun. It's the time of year everybody waits for.
Indeed, and let's start off, I guess, talking with the Raptors and what's been going on with them. Obviously, Chris Bosh is first, second, and third in people's
is
minds.
I haven't heard that. Really?
You're on Twitter. You must have heard about some tweets or something like that.
What did he really? Did he say something? Where is he now? I heard he's everywhere.
That's right, everywhere. That is, of course, right next to Parts Unknown from Wrestling Fans.
Yes.
Yes, so you are still residing in Toronto. We should confirm that while we're on the phone.
That's true. Although I felt like I was everywhere for a while there.
That's true. I mean, traveling around like you do, you must relate to Chris Bosh and being everywhere.
Yes. Nah, I wouldn't say that, but I was in a few places.
There you go. But in all seriousness, we had some fun. Obviously, what's going on here with Chris? And does this surprise? Before we get into is he gonna go or is he gonna stay? Does it surprise you that for a guy who for the entire season kept really quiet about this topic, all of a sudden is blurting out on Twitter, asking people what he should do?
No, it doesn't. Because I think if you go back to, you know, his all-star YouTube video, I think that Chris, you know, is certainly cognizant of what, you know, this can do for him. And so I think that he is, you know, somebody that, is willing to test the waters of the new social media. And, you know, I think for any of us to think, that LeBron, Dwayne, Bosh and Amari Stoudemire, although all of them have said repeatedly, including Joe Johnson, that they haven't been thinking about this. You know, I think that it's interesting to note that, you know, you look at LeBron James and, you know, you talk to many people that are close to that situation. They say, oh, this is what he's been, you know, waiting for the last 2 years. And so, like anybody with any job, if you know that there is something on the horizon, it is something that you think about, and you don't wait till the end of the season to think about it. I'm sure that there were many nights when, although he may not have discussed it with anyone, that Bosh did think about, you know, is it going to be Toronto or will it be someplace else? And I'm certain it was the same for LeBron James. And I think that also, for anybody to think that all this stuff doesn't have any sort of effect on the team and the direction, I think it's interesting to note that Amari Stoudemire is the only one that's left, that's a big free agent that's, you know, still in the postseason. And, you know, you kind of think back, now you wonder why is that? Maybe because you have a presence like a Steve Nash on the inside, and Amari certainly is, as we all know, back at the trading deadline was somebody that was being considered to be sent out of town.
And that was kind of my next question, so I'll change it a little bit. Has all this 2010 nonsense had a negative impact on the NBA? Because, I mean, we have the playoffs going on, and all the talk is about LeBron, and it was about Bosh and Wade. Does that take away from the product? Is this maybe more than what the NBA bargained for in kind of encouraging people to hype this up a little bit?
No, I think it's good for the NBA because I think it's good that people are talking about the NBA. And if they, you know, want to talk about, the free agency aspect of it, then great. And I think that, you know, when you can have this at, you know, once the finals are done, you know, this discussion is going to continue to rage. And I think that any time that you can have that sort of discussion 24/7, you know, I think it's a positive. And certainly, you know, traveling when, you know, as I was down in the U.S., you know, throughout the playoffs, it was the lead story. The NBA was the lead story every single day. Certainly that's not the case here, but in the U.S. it was, and I think that that's, you know, a positive for the league.
But does it not devalue the playoffs, which is supposed to be your marquee event?
No, I don't think it devalues it. I think, I think at this stage, you know, once the West and the East get underway and once the NBA playoffs get underway, I don't think that it devalues it. I think that that maybe, you know, for us that follow it on a daily basis, you get tired of all that extracurricular stuff. But yet it's something that whether you're following anybody on Twitter or whether you, you know, go on the internet or pick up the newspaper, it's something that's there and is a constant. So for me, I just think that it's, doesn't devalue it because the games are the games. But the topic of conversation, they'll carry through no matter, you know, if there's a game or not a game.
And then taking it back to Bosch, I think for fans, this is a very emotional thing, given the history of this franchise. But for Chris, it isn't. And it's more of a business decision. But yet, he's kind of made it an emotional thing now by going on Twitter and doing what he's done.
I think that, I think for any franchise, with any fan, it's emotional. Look at Cleveland. I mean, if you have a passionate fan base, you know, which certainly Toronto has, you know, I think that, you know, you get tied to your players, and that's the great bond that sports provides. Now, you know, projecting out from a player standpoint, you know, will there be, if he decides to leave, will there be an emotional moment? I'm sure, you know, for him, you know, what that means, whether it's just, you know, reflecting back on the time that he spent here. Certainly he has friends here in this marketplace. I think that anytime you're with, you know, in a city for 7 years and you spend part of your time, majority of your time in that city, certainly you're going to develop relationships. So, to say that it's just strictly a business decision, I think that, you know, there's, a lot of different factors that will go into it. And what ultimately will be the deciding factor, I think, is what all of us, you know, think about and say, well, that's what piques everybody's curiosity for each one of these players.
But what does this mean for the fan base? Because we'll go under the assumption if Bosch leaves. If he leaves, he goes on to that list. And that list, of course, you know, Damon Stoudemire, Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter, now Chris Bosch. How does this fan base deal with that? And how can they kind of get emotionally attached to anyone? Or do they become a little bit detached now?
Well, that's a question that I think will be answered, you know, as we, you know, move forward. I think that one of the things that, you know, I've always felt, you know, no matter where, what, when, the situation, that winning does cure all. Even though when you win, you know, it'll still hide, you know, certain flaws that you may have within a team. But, you know, if this team comes out next year, if he's here and they play and they win, it's the greatest thing going. If he's here and they don't, then it's not. If he's gone and they win, it's great. And if, you know, so, you know, at the end of the day, from a fan base standpoint, the sense that I get from fans, you know, James, is that they just want to win. And the other sense that I get that, you know, Toronto is very much like a lot of northeastern cities, whether it be New York or Philadelphia or Boston, and that is this, that, you know, on a daily basis, you know, people get up and they go to work. And whether, you know, there's snow on the ground or snow is coming sideways or whether or not it's cold, you know, they get up and they go. And what does that mean? That means that, you know, typically, you know, those type of cities, and it's typically the case and has been in New York, Philly, and Boston, and also in Toronto's history and talking to people, is that they embrace people that are hard-nosed people. And I think that if, you know, this team moving forward, you know, has a sense of, you know, that grind them out kind of, you know, hard nosed mentality, you know, I think that people, along with the fact that they're going to win, and, you know, if they win, I think people will embrace that.
But can that be a team that wins? Because when you look at the playoffs right now, the teams that are still around, they all have that major star. They have a Dwight Howard in Orlando. They have a Kobe Bryant with the Lakers. You have Steve Nash, and it used to be the big three in Boston. I think it's now Rajon Rondo. That's a conversation to have a little later, but there is star power, and Chris Bosh is that star power for this team.
Well, there's a blend, I think. If you look at Orlando, they have, you know, role players that accept their role and embrace it and move forward. Boston certainly has that, and L.A. has that as well, and Phoenix has that also. So there always has to be a perfect blend of that star power and then the role players, and that doesn't change, you know, the sport. Certainly, whether it be basketball, football, baseball, or hockey, you need a blend of the guy that you know can deliver in the clutch and then the guy that on a nightly basis, you know, is grinding it out. And finding that perfect blend is the key. If you have Bosch and you add a dynamic wing player, watch out. Because I think we all believe and know that if you look at L.A., if you look at Phoenix, if you look at Boston, and if you look at Orlando, they have a combination of some inside presence, but also dynamic guard play. And while, you know, Jameer Nelson may not have been all that dynamic on Sunday or during the regular season, he certainly was through the first two rounds. But then also you couple that with the fact that they're just a three-point shooting machine. We've already seen Rajon Rondo, as you just alluded to, and then also the addition of the reemergence of Ray Allen. You know, this guy was going to get traded at the deadline, and all of a sudden, you know, he's been massive in the postseason. And we all know what LA has, and certainly we know what Captain Canada brings to Phoenix.
Indeed, and let's talk about the other free agent for the Toronto Raptors that I think is important for them. That would be Amir Johnson. I think he showed a lot down the stretch in this season. I think the fans really like him. And he's part of that group, the Young Guns, with DeMar and Sonny. And how important is it to bring him back, regardless of if Chris comes back or not?
Well, I think that, you know, he certainly, you know, proved that he is a, you know, a solid piece. And I think for the right price is somebody that you want to have on your roster, because he's a guy that's going to go out and provide, you know, five rebounds a night. And that's certainly important, 5 to 6. He's somebody that wants to get better, has worked on his game. You know, the one thing about Amir moving forward that he'll certainly have to make adjustments is, you know, he's got to stay on the floor, learn to stay on the floor, because as both of us know and all the fans know, you know, he had trouble getting into foul, or, you know, he got into foul trouble. So, you know, that's certainly, you know, something that he's going to have to work on moving forward. But, you know, that trade, you know, although, you know, Carlos Delfino had some positive moments in the postseason, you know, that inconsistency was certainly there. And the two guys that were extremely consistent for the Raptors this year, Sonny Weems and Amir Johnson. And I think that you'll take consistency on a nightly basis instead of flashes of brilliance.
And then the other two members of that squad, Sonny Weems, you just briefly touched on, and I think it's safe to say he'll be back with the Raptors. They're going to pick up his option. I think that's a safe bet. And then DeMar DeRozan is, of course, under contract. What do you expect from these two young guys? They're back next year, indeed.
Well, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that they want to do with Sonny is they want to see if he can stretch out and knock down a three. You know, he showed the ability to hit the mid-range game. And then also, I think, you know, he's a guy that at the start of the year said, hey, I want to be a rotation player. He proved that he could be a rotation player. And now for him, it's just going to that next step. The next step is, you know, concentration for both of them. It's very similar for both of them because they're both athletic. But it's, you know, defensively, you know, being more productive on the defensive end. And then also for DeMar as well as Sonny, you know, expanding their three-point range. That's something that, you know, the coaching staff, I know, would like to see with both of them.
Is it a great situation to have both of them, though? Because I think they get along, they hang out together, they spend all their time together, and I think they push one another. Is that a mischaracterization, or you agree?
No, they do. No, they do, and I think they're happy for each other's success, and I think that it's important in any walk of life, in any profession, that, you know, you have a connection with somebody, a coworker that, you know, you can share in key moments. And certainly they do. They have that connection, which is great. And it's, you know, beneficial, and it has been beneficial for both of them.
And then lastly, this is probably the most important offseason of Brian Colangelo's career, regardless of what happens with Bosch. How does he come out on the other side of it and look good?
Well, I think, you know, certainly his career with the Toronto Raptors, you know, he's been in situations like this before with the Phoenix Suns and has come out. You know, you look at the, you know, bringing in Steve Nash and the different moves that he has made throughout his career there. So, you know, it certainly is, you know, going to be important. It'll be interesting to see how it all develops. I don't think that anybody at this stage, you know, knows, you know, how it all, you know, come together. But, you know, certainly based upon the resume and his track record that, you know, I feel secure, you know, that this is something that's going to get worked out. And you know, if Chris decides to come back, or if Chris decides that he would like to play someplace else, and then, you know, I'm sure they'll get into discussions with respect to a sign and trade.
Yeah, they both come out on the record and said that is the route they'd go if Chris didn't return. That's something that didn't go on in Cleveland with LeBron James.
No, you know what? I doubt that the Cleveland Cavaliers would be involved in a sign and trade. Because I think that they have so much invested in LeBron. And I'm not talking about from a financial perspective of him on the floor. I'm talking about from an organizational standpoint, whether it be their practice facility, you know, in the location of their practice facility, and also, you know, a lot of the amenities that are provided to, you know, LeBron James and his quote-unquote team, as he talked about the other night there at the Q. So this is a organization that has totally wrapped everything around the Cavaliers and have with LeBron James. And I still, you know, despite all the conversations of him going other places, you know, I still think that maybe I'm the naive one, but I still think that, you know, he could end up, you know, in Cleveland when it's all said and done. There may be other changes, but I think that he may end up staying. Because if, from a pressure standpoint, in the moments of pressure that were on him in Cleveland, you know, hopefully the people that are around him will explain to him that if he goes anyplace else, that pressure is even going to be more intense. And you know, I think that there's still a side to him. If he walks away from that organization, you know, I think it alters, you know, quite a bit, you know, it really does. And I'm just talking about from a personal standpoint of, you know, going back there and living in that area.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot more tied to LeBron James, I think, than there is to Chris Bosh or Dwayne Wade. I think it has a much huger effect on the Cleveland franchise, and not just the franchise, but the city. I mean, that city is built up around that arena. There's bars, there's restaurants, there's all these people. I mean, my God, they made a We Are the World video asking them to stay. I can't imagine them doing that here in Toronto for Chris Bosh, or for them doing that in Miami for Dwayne Wade. This is a big deal for the city of Cleveland.
Well, he's certainly one of the best players of all time, you know. So given that, you know, you're going to respond accordingly if you're the fan base, that's for sure.
But I just think, though, for the city, though, too, it's a huge thing beyond just basketball. It's what basketball brings to the table for that city in the sense of getting people out there spending the money. I think the Raptors go on regardless of if Chris Bosh comes or goes. Same thing goes down in Miami. I think things will stay the status quo. With Cleveland, I'm not convinced of that.
Well, I think for anyone that understands what Toronto has gone through with respect to an entire city and the sports scene and the sports landscape here. Cleveland, to understand what they've gone through as a city, you know, Cleveland has had some tumultuous times as a city itself, a city that has attempted on a couple of different occasions to reinvent itself. But from a franchise, sports franchise standpoint, they lost their beloved Browns, rightfully so, when Art Modell moved to Baltimore. The city and the fan base were able to retain the name, the Browns. They were able, obviously, then to have an expansion franchise, you know, come to Cleveland as the Browns and have all those records retained there and maintained there by the new organization. But this is a city, whether it be the Cleveland Indians, the Cleveland Cavaliers, or the Cleveland Browns, they have not had a championship since 1964, and that was in the NFL with Jim Brown, the great Hall of Fame running back, and it was also at a time prior to the Super Bowl, so they won an NFL championship. And so this is a city that feels as though they are on the cusp of greatness with LeBron, and that this is their opportunity to become a championship city. And it wasn't that long ago, as baseball fans know, that they got into the World Series, and they ended up losing to the Florida Marlins. And at that time, Wayne Huizenga had, you know, essentially gone out and spent a ton of money on pitchers and the entire team. And their salary situation was a lot different from Cleveland. Cleveland was in there, and Cleveland eventually lost. I think it was 97, 98 in that time frame. So, you know, this is a city that has had a lot of pain, you know, when it comes to their sports franchises. And so I think, understandably so, you know, they feel as though their best-case scenario is latching on to LeBron James.
And then one last thing on this whole free agent mess. Dwayne Wade seems to always be the one that everyone is more confident in staying in Miami, other than the fact that Miami has beautiful weather. Why is that?
Well, he's already won a franchise there. They can pay him the most money, and they have money to spend. And I think that most people believe that it's an easier attraction to get someone to sign to play in Miami than, let's say, Cleveland or maybe some other cities. So that's his franchise, very much like, you know, Cleveland is LeBron's franchise. And if you look over the world, you look over the world of the NBA, you know, where's Dwayne going to go? Dwayne's not going to go to Chicago because, you know, he dominates the basketball. And Derrick Rose dominates the basketball. They're not cohesive. They're not going to be able to play with one another, I don't believe. And so, you know, when you're building a team, you have to recognize that. And so, you know, I would think that, you know, for him, the ideal situation is for him to be in Miami and now try to go out and attract, you know, somebody to come to Miami to play alongside him.
And then we'll talk a little bit of playoffs, and then we'll let you go. Other than the Boston Celtics, what surprised you?
You know, I think, you know, you have to be a little bit surprised about Phoenix. You know, certainly throughout the course of the season, you know, people, you know, coming into this year, for instance, you know, I don't think that people looked at Phoenix as a team that was going to go to the Western Conference Finals. And Steve Nash has led him there through all the trade rumors of Amari Stoudemire and the direction of that organization. I think Steve Kerr deserves a lot of credit. And Steve Nash deserves a bundle of credit. And the fact that they are where they are right now, you know, I think is great for the game. It's great to see Steve Nash excel. And then, you know, certainly Boston is a surprise. And then to me, you know, what happened with Cleveland wasn't necessarily a surprise. I mean, I wasn't a huge, and we've had this conversation before, you know, if you take LeBron off of that roster, I've just never been a massive fan of that roster. And I know with Antoine Jameson that really elevated it. But when you bring people on, you have to develop an offense that's going to allow certain guys to excel. And I just don't know that Mike Brown ever did that there. And then also Shaquille O'Neal, you know, since winning that title, he's been on teams that, you know, haven't made it to the playoffs and haven't been back to not only the NBA finals, but also the conference finals. And I think at 37 years of age, I think lost in all this is the fact that, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, had all the conversation about LeBron, and there was no spotlight on him possibly playing in his final game. And that's why I think right now he's trying to let it be known that he, you know, wants to be out there and he wants to continue to play.
Yeah, he's almost getting to the point where this is a blast from the past. Some kids will have to Google this name, but he's almost like Tree Rollins-like at this point.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean,
just in longevity, not in play.
Yeah. Well, look, he wants to continue to play. And I think, you know, he will continue to play because I think that there'll be a team out there that says, you know what, let's bring Shaq in. And Shaq, if you can accept a role, maybe coming off of the bench, or if you have to be, you know, heard in the starting lineup, we'll go ahead and do that. But you may only play 20 minutes or so. And you know, I think it's like very much like an Allen Iverson. Is he willing at this stage, although he had to accept a different role in Cleveland, is he willing to, you know, accept that different role? You know, look at what has happened with Phoenix since he left, and the voice in the locker room is now Steve Nash's. It's not, you know, Shaquille O'Neal.
And I don't begrudge him that. Let me get that out there, because I think it's great if a guy actually loves the sport and wants to keep playing it. If he's able to be on a roster, I don't care which roster it is, that's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that.
Nor should anyone. Nor should anyone.
And then lastly, it is almost ping pong ball time. The Raptors obviously are well down that list for the ping pong balls. But in general, what do you think of this draft class, and who are some guys that stand out for you at the top of it, and then where the Raptors likely would pick? Is there a guy that stands out for you that makes sense?
You know what? I haven't, you know, with all the work that I've done in the playoffs, I haven't spent much time actually looking at names as of yet, you know, outside of the names that everybody knows of John Wall and Evan Turner. So I haven't even begun to look at, you know, what this draft class may or may not have. I've talked to a handful of scouts about it. You know, they think it can be a fairly, you know, they think that it can be a fairly deep draft. And a handful of scouts that I've talked to, you know, have given me a list of a few different names that they like. But, you know, I haven't actually spent the time, you know, looking into anything as of now. So, you know, what the Raptors are going to get, who knows? We'll find out tomorrow, right? I mean, hopefully for the Raptors' sake, you know, the ball will bounce in the proper way and they'll be able to, you know, move up a little bit and possibly land something that would be beneficial for them.
Believe it or not, I'm cheering for the third pick, because you know who I like a lot? It's not John Wall, it's DeMarcus Cousins. He gets a lot of knocks from people, but I like the way this kid plays, and I think he fits kind of what the Raptors need. He's a mean guy. He goes in there, he fights on the boards. He's a battler, and I think he's going to be good.
I you know, in talking to some, you know, people, you know, the one thing that you have to be concerned about with DeMarcus Cousins is his, and I, you know, obviously he's going to be a lottery pick, is his lack of lift. And there haven't been too many dominant bigs in the NBA that have had a lack of lift. And if you watched him this year, as I was fortunate enough to watch him on a handful of occasions, you know, you look at his inability to actually get off of the ground, and I think that was somewhat of a concern for some people. But as you also know, too, you know, at this stage of the game, all their flaws are going to be picked over, you know, 10 times over. So I think, you know, you're not going to get a true sense of him until you get in and you can go ahead and see how he, you know, on the workout standpoint, plays out, and, you know, who do you bring into the workouts, you know, for him to work out against.
Yeah, I just like the way he battles and competes. I mean, we get into all these measurables and all this stuff,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, sometimes I think what we miss out on is what's inside someone. And I think he has a heart and a drive and a desire and just an inner kind of meanness that I like.
That may very well be the case. You know, I having not, you know, spoken to him, and only watching him, you know, in games, you know, I don't have, you know, necessarily the same read, but I will say this, that there's no question about it. He's got some fight in him. All you need to do is, sit close to the bench of where John Calipari is, and you can certainly get a sense of, you know, the conversations that DeMarcus Cousins have and Coach Cal have.
And he may be coming to the NBA.
Well, so they say.
I don't know. But you'll be back in the NBA next year, right?
No question.
All right.
I think Cal would love to be in the NBA, as would Rick Pitino. But whether or not they'll find their way back in, I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
It's going to be a very interesting summer. I'm sure we will call on you again. This was fun. Enjoy some time with your family. They get to know you again. I mean, you have been going nonstop since October. So have some fun with the kiddies, and we'll call on you again, I'm sure.
All right, all the best.